Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Is Javi Baez the most instinctive athlete in Chicago? Who else is on the short list?
Javi Baez is like some kind of baseball genius. Every time he gets on the base path, he wreaks havoc. You know, the guy created tag metrics. I've never even heard of a guy that can tag people out like that and the stuff he can do. He's just a magician. And that hence the nickname.
El Mago.
But I think there are players that just have a feel for the game, that just have an understanding of the game, and it's sort of different level understanding of the game. I think Patrick Kane is a very instinctive hockey player. Just seems to be able to get a hold of the puck, do things, be in the right spot. You know, it's an amazing thing to watch, and I would say that Kaner might be the most naturally instinctive athlete in Chicago, to be honest about it. But I think Baez, You want to see him bat. You want to see him field. He was playing what would you call it? Shallow left field. I mean, he's throwing guys out from the grass. Like, he's halfway to the vines, and he's just fielding the ball and throwing guys out. And he backhands things at the edge of the. He's just the guy. Just has an unbelievable knack. He has been my favorite Cubs player really since he came up, and it's like, he just keeps getting better. And this is what you wanted to see from all of that core. You wanted guys that were just constantly going to get better. And Baez, he's worth the price of admission.
He eluded the tag at first base like a running back.
Oh, that was hysterical.
Immediately moved up Mel Kiper Jr.'s running back ratings.
That was hysterical.
To a mid-round pick.
Was he out of
that was
the
hilarious.
Was
he no, out of the, he was not out of baseline.
To the naked eye, it didn't look like
and
it.
And he changed directions so effortlessly.
Oh, my God, it was great.
He just kept going, and he dives in the first.
You ever play touch football with a guy that really couldn't get his flag?
That's exactly what he did. He's every 12-year-old dream flag football teammate. You know, he's the guy on Saturday afternoons you couldn't catch. Instinctive in Chicago, you're right. Patrick Kane, I think, is a good one. DeBrincat is very instinctive. He has to be to play and excel at that size in the NHL. Duncan Keith is a better athlete than people they take for granted now, but he's lasted as long as he has at the level that he's played because he's such a good athlete. Khalil Mack's a great athlete. I think when you look
at
him.
But that's not what the question is. Instinctive.
Well, he's got great instincts. You know, I think, okay, he's got great physical ability too, but instinctive. Traits you look at guys
Mac is speed and relentlessness. He just does not ever. His motor is so good. I don't know.
Mitch Trubisky's a pretty good athlete. Instinctively, he's got pretty good instincts. I think you'd like to see maybe a little bit, but not on the level of Javi Baez. Certainly,
when you talk about natural touch on the ball, he doesn't throw.
No, I think the clock in his head. You can tell he has very good. Good running instincts. I think he knows when to tuck it and run. Things that apply to football more than baseball. You look at the Bulls. I don't know that they have anybody that kind of fits. It comes to mind when you think of just natural instincts, and that's why they're in the league or why they're excelling. So, you hear Joe Maddon post game comparing Javi Baez to Gale Sayers. That was funny. But if it's just downright instincts, there's not maybe a better player in the city. There's not maybe a better player in baseball that has Javi Baez's instincts.
Gale Sayers, he had this. He galloped like a running back, like a racehorse, and he could stop on a dime and turn. And he was as elite. Just his absolute. I don't even know how to describe it. Totally different than a guy like Walter Payton, who was kind of herky jerky and. Different running style, but Gale Sayers it was elegance. It was just this beautiful, like, full, you know, in full stride turns. And I've never seen a player like that.
Hester's instincts. Yeah, you think about returns, too.
That's interesting. Hester is an instinct returner.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he didn't have that when the ball was punted to him for some reason.
Or when he was a receiver. Yeah. Good boy. Javi Baez is by far the best player in the city, and it's not even close.
Tim Anderson is the best player in baseball.
Like I said, Javi Baez is the best player in the city, and it's not even close. And it is tough to distinguish a little bit, the most talented players, because when I was thinking about, okay, who else is on this short list, naturally you just end up naming a lot of the best players. And like David, I also thought of Khalil Mack. And, of course, Patrick Kane. Defensively, Albert Almora has great instincts.
That's a good one.
But I'll go off the board. Corey Crawford. How do you win two cups? How do you excel at that position and not have great instincts? Mitch Trubisky, he's great at finding open spaces, air. Nobody even close to the football. But I'll go with Crawford.
Wow. Michael Lombardi, part of the 5 at 5 this morning.
I watched last year.
I mean, this guy, Baez, is so fun to watch. So fun to watch. Yeah. I mean, he just amazes. He finds a way to amaze you at damn near every game. It's awesome. He's in his own class, I'd like to even say. But the first guy I did think of was Khalil Mack when thinking of who's on the short list. Just the way his ability to get to the quarterback, what he does, the way he just bulldozes through people is just amazing. That was the first guy on the short list that I thought of. But of course, I do like the Patrick Kane sentiment, and I do like Joe's Corey Crawford answer there as well. But I mean, Baez is just in a class of his own, and he made that first baseman yesterday look like they were on the basketball court, and he just broke his ankles. It was awesome.
Yeah, that play was a ton of fun to watch. I told Mully the story, so I was nervous as usual during the Cubs game, so I was moving about the house, and we had wrapped up dinner before the game started, but I still needed to get the garbage outside. So I got up off the couch and I took the garbage outside. And my wife, who's also a huge Cubs fan, says, "Hurry up and get back in here. Your whole show is happening on the television right now." And she had live paused the DVR to show me this Baez play. And then all of a sudden, my littlest one has now gotten up and she's doing it. She's like, "See, Dad, he went like this and then he went like that." And she's like, dove into the chair, you know, like he
oh,
dove
that's
into
great.
Like, you know, so that's what you love about it, that gets the whole family involved and pumped up. But good answer. Like the other thing, Molly, that you brought up and Ray just added to it there was the whole, his defensive plays early in that game. Like he's literally playing like short left.
Yeah.
And with ease though. And then Rizzo, who, you know, had maybe he's broken out of his thing and May's approaching, and so maybe it's Rizzo time, but just, you know, just kind of,
or maybe the pitcher was so bad even Rizzo hit a home
right,
run,
right? Maybe that too. But he just throws his glove up like over his shoulder, like, "Oh, I got this. Oh, I got this." And they're just so in tune with each other. And then, you know, it's Kaner, and I think Crawford's a great answer by you, Joe. It's these hockey guys, because especially when some people hate the shootout, I love the shootout. I don't pay professional sports prices to see games end in ties. I want a winner. I want a definitive answer to who won and who lost, even if it's my favorite team that ends up being on the wrong side of it. So I'm a big shootout guy. And what Kane does with the stick and the puck in those shootouts is absolutely, when those moments happen, though, Molly, those Kaner moments in those shootouts, that's when he does get into the Baez conversation. He just makes it look so easy.
I think Baez gets into the Patrick Kane conversation.
That's what I mean. I
think Patrick Kane was here first.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's just that this is just another, and it is what it is. It's just another. The bottom line is baseball is so much more popular.
Do you remember the first time or the first couple times you saw Dennis Savard with the spin around?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like Kaner can do stuff like that all the time. Different, you know, not one kind of particular signature thing, but a lot of stuff like that.
And both those guys play with a joy that makes those instincts even more just easier to appreciate.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question, and obviously a ripe one.
Was Tuesday night rock bottom for the White Sox? Should the struggles of Ivan Nova and Irvin Santana compel the Sox to consider free agent starters Gio Gonzalez or Dallas Keuchel?
Well, that was pretty bad. I mean, when you hear Nova after the game say that was his worst outing since the first one in spring training, or early in spring training, you know how bad he was. And it's not it's just, you hope that it's rock bottom. You hope that they don't get any worse than that. I mean, how bad can it get? You lose to a bad Orioles team that we had just talked about a day earlier. Like, boy, they stink.
Oh, they're really
they
bad.
They stink. And yeah. Then they go out and they hang nine on the White Sox with Nova looking at like he did on the mound. I mean, Dwight Smith Jr. was doing things for the Orioles. Where's Jerome Walton Jr. when you need him? I thought that was really bad, and I would encourage them, yeah, to consider any and all options if you're going to fortify your starting rotation. That we'll find out tonight, because Santana goes on the mound, and I thought that Santana and Nova would be better than they have been early. They've been a little bit of a disappointment, and so if Gonzalez is out there, if Dallas Keuchel is out there, if you're Rick Hahn, I think that you want to consider all those options as short-term rentals. Maybe you can flip them. Maybe they're going to be part of the solution long-term, but why not? What do you have to lose? You know, Dylan Cease isn't coming up anytime soon, it doesn't appear. And once he does, maybe, you know, he'll take one of these guys' spots. But, boy, last night was hard to watch for the White Sox.
I said yesterday I thought the Orioles might be worse than Miami after watching that first game, because I haven't watched enough Oriole baseball, and certainly they've been playing awful. They're 9-16. The Sox are now 9-13. So, like, I better be careful what I say. Again, this season is not about Ivan Nova. This season is not about Santana. This is a season that is about the White Sox young players, and I feel like they're getting better. I feel like Tim Anderson is really, as he says, my story's getting interesting. I think he's right. I think Moncada gives me hope. Abreu's bat's come alive a little bit, so that's good to see. But it's about the future, and it's about the guys that are going to be a part of it. You mentioned Dylan Cease. He will be up here soon enough. Gio Gonzalez is a guy that's been on the Sox a couple times. I would make a call, and I think that Coop knows him. They could figure out what to do with him. Why not have another pitcher? Why not go get a guy and, you know, give him a couple minor league starts, work with him a little bit, you get him up, maybe you move him. Who knows, right? I thought Ivan Nova was a good signing, because I thought he's, you know, look at the guy. He's a big horse, man. He can eat innings. He's going to be, and he hasn't done that, and he hasn't been very good at all. And I, you know, my scouting of Ivan Nova is pretty much limited to Pittsburgh playing the Cubs, and I always thought he was pretty decent. So I'm surprised that he's been as bad as he is. Still think there's something there. Santana, you know, this was a crapshoot. So I don't know how much longer you roll the dice.
And if you're a Cubs fan, don't you want the Sox to get Gio Gonzalez before the Brewers do?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how good Gio is at this point.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
So I don't think there should be a rush for him. Dallas Keuchel, I don't think the Sox need Dallas Keuchel. I don't think that makes sense for them. Yeah, it's about the young guys, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around it. And I really thought they'd win that game last night and they'd inch ever closer to 500, and I thought they could get back there. They're in a stretch of games right now. What are there, 12 left, something like that, where they could really turn their season around if they played a little more consistently. But just 2 out of 3 ain't bad. That's fine.
It's the bottom after 22 games. If we're talking about the entire rebuild, the rock bottom was 100 losses last season. Gio Gonzalez would make some sense, and the reason being that they have one starter you trust in the rotation, Rodon, and even when Kopech does return and you bring up Cease, they're still short arms, mm-hmm. because you don't know if you believe once Giolito is healthy and Reynaldo Lopez long term. Gio Gonzalez, it was a Triple A deal and it was a base salary of $3 million. You know the Sox have money. That would make a lot of sense, much more sense than a Keuchel signing.
Joe, you just said, you know, bringing back Kopech as if that's automatic. Is that automatic? I mean, this surgery is automatic, so Dane Dunning's coming back too. I mean, none of these guys are getting slowed down. I saw Zach Birdie struck out the side, but I don't know how good he was.
No, I think you've got to assume that technology.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, but yeah, my original point was you have one starter. So if you want to add to that depth, I don't have a problem with it. And we understand what the season is about. It's all about development. It's just a little bothersome because you look at this AL Central, and it's there for anybody. If you have a somewhat competitive team, it's there. Detroit's above 500 so far. Cleveland, they're going to really fall down this season. They're just a couple games above, and I don't see them taking off and getting in the neighborhood of 95 wins or something like that. But a Gonzalez signing would make sense. Keuchel, not so much.
I will say that it's still early in the season, but anytime you get rocked by the Orioles, and Mully, I know you pointed out the similarities in the records, but anytime you get rocked by the Orioles, that's kind of rock bottom there. Marlins would be the same deal for sure. So I'm going to say yes, but this is, you know, rebuild mode. There's going to be these plateaus, these dips, where, you know, if you're looking at a chart of the White Sox season in terms of wins and losses and highs and lows. So this is expected. This is going to happen every now and then and when you're in this stage of a rebuild. So it doesn't surprise me, but it sure was hard and ugly to watch. Absolutely. And the Sox absolutely should consider signing another free agent starter. Gio Gonzalez would not break the bank, so I like what you guys pointed out there with him. He makes more sense than Dallas Keuchel, and they absolutely should. I mean, now is the time to add another arm. This is the time to do it. I mean, Rick Hahn never puts a year on when the Sox are going to be competitive. He refuses to do that, but you know, in closed doors, this is what they're talking about. There's got to be a window that they're looking for here, and it's got to be soon with all this young talent that they're expecting to do big things with. So now's the time. Add a guy. Add a Gio Gonzalez. Absolutely.
Well, it better be rock bottom, at least for Ivan Nova. I mean, that's for sure. And Mully, you're right. But the only problem, this is not about these guys per se. It's not about, we've talked about it a lot, this is not about wins and losses. But Ivan Nova is not setting a very good example for the younger crowd. And I wonder, is it because the team's not very good and he's not getting motivated? Is he not preparing right? He's not giving you the inning, so he's getting you to a bad bullpen quicker than you want to get to. So I think maybe it's time to cut bait with him and go get Gio Gonzalez. I agree with Joe that Dallas Keuchel, is the fan base at 35th and Shields going to drive down there because Dallas Keuchel's on the mound? Probably not. Okay, so there's no reason to sign Dallas Keuchel. But Gio Gonzalez might give at least a better effort and teach somebody something more than Ivan Nova is right now.
You know, that's a good question.
If Robbie Gould reportedly wants the 49ers to trade him, how should the Bears respond? Can they realistically strike with, wait for it, Gould?
Wow, I waited.
It was worth the wait, wasn't it?
What about frankincense like and myrrh?
You know, I got to be honest with you. I really wonder, that to me, this leads to a larger question, which is, do the Bears want Robbie Gould? Do the Bears really want Robbie Gould? Robbie Gould wants the Bears. The Bear fans want Robbie Gould. Does the organization want Robbie Gould? Because we haven't heard that yet. What would you give up for Robbie Gould? If you really thought that he was the difference between a Super Bowl or another early exit, what would you give up for him? He seemingly would be worth a lot, but they don't want to give up anything for him. They want this to play out. Robbie Gould thinks he can play longer. He's looking for a longer contract. He's on a franchise tag. He's going to be the highest paid kicker in the league, but he's not going to show up until the day of. And I guess when he does show up, he'll be fine. I just wonder if the Bears want him. I really do. I haven't heard that. I haven't, just talking to people, they just seem to be watching the story. They don't seem like they're going to get involved. When we ask if how should they respond, they're not responding. They're just waiting. They're not looking to cut a deal. Right. They're not looking to give up any kind of draft pick. And I think it makes no sense from a Niners standpoint. You have control of a guy. I know it's a kicker, and it's almost like you don't want to bother with it. But are you going to let him talk his way out of town when you control his rights? And are you going to let him go to a team that you believe you could face in the playoffs? You know, the Niners.
What executive does that?
They have a lot of aspirations.
What executive does that? Really?
No executive does.
What good executive
does that? The Niners feel that they have built a good team, mm-hmm. and the quarterback got hurt. And now he's back and healthy, and it's win time, and they're going to get a great pass rusher out of the draft.
Sure.
And they feel like they're a team to be reckoned with. They don't feel like, you know what? Why don't we help those other guys?
Well, the 49ers, we're looking at 6-10 again. No, they're not looking at it that way.
No, they're looking at 10-6, yeah. And they're thinking that they could face the Bears in the playoff, yeah. Why would they give away an asset?
So let's look at what we know, because, you know where I stand on the Robbie Gould idea and the idea where the Bears are a kicker away from being a Super Bowl
team.
Everybody understands that. Everybody knows that the Cody Parkey miss prevented what it prevented and all these things. But let's look at what we know. We know that Robbie Gould's heart definitely is not in San Francisco. We know that he wants to be a Bear. And we also know that, as you point out, Molly, if you're paying attention to this, as we are, there's been really very little buzz about Robbie Gould's return to Halas Hall at Halas Hall. Inside Halas Hall, I can tell you that there is not a consensus, as there is among Bears fans, that Robbie Gould coming back to the Bears is a great idea for whatever reason. For whatever reason, those feelings exist. They do exist, and that's not manufactured. That's real. So there's got to be two to tango, and I think when you look at what is ahead of, in this story, there's a lot in the way. Now, if I'm Ryan Pace, if I'm the football people at Halas Hall, I get everybody in a room, and I do try to have this conversation. What are we missing? What don't we have to become a Super Bowl contender? If you're convinced that it's a kicker, you get past whatever it is that are the non-football reasons that might be preventing this from happening or from you pursuing him. But I do wonder how motivated Ryan Pace will be to bring in a guy that's a reminder of one of his biggest miscalculations since he became general manager. So you've got to consider all of these things before you get to the point where, if you're John Lynch, as you point out, why in the world would you succumb to a kicker who's trying to hold your franchise hostage? You wouldn't. You don't need him in camp. You don't need him until week one. Let him hold out. You have the leverage. Exercise it.
We have a kicker demanding a trade. What? I was like, really? A kicker demanding a trade? That's what's going on. Have we even seen kickers be traded before? There was Josh Scobie years ago. The Steelers acquired him for like a six-round pick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that the starting point? You look at a fifth? I don't even know. I'm not sure. I agree, David. I'm not sure that the Bears want him. Gold just wants to be loved. Tell me how great I am. I'm going to go back to Chicago. I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to take the Bears all the way to the Super Bowl because I'm the kicker. Okay.
But Joe, I get where he's coming from.
There are some alarm bells going off here, though, too. And I get what you were alluding to. And how is he going to be in the locker room being viewed as the guy that's going to come back and save the Bears? And how would the Bears locker room react to that? But San Francisco's wondering right now, can we bring him back here in this locker room? Because he's telling his teammates, I don't want to be here anymore. In the end, I don't think John Lynch moves on. He understands the asset that he has, and he doesn't have to do anything. So he's going to keep him with the Niners, and they're expecting, as you guys mentioned, a big bounce-back season with a healthy quarterback for 2019. So I don't think it's realistic. I think he's going to be a Niner.
And if we were talking about Robbie Gould, the wide receiver, this would be some other type of conversation. But yeah, it all comes down to the fact that this guy is a kicker. It's what he is. He's a kicker. And ultimately, I mean, you could say the Bears were a kicker away from a trip to the Super Bowl last year. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I mean, it's unprecedented. What are you going to do? What kind of to make a move like this? It just doesn't seem like worth it. It just seems like a headache. It seems like you could probably just find a guy through your audition of quarterbacks that will be better than last year's kicker. Absolutely. A guy who can make some damn field goals. It just doesn't seem like it's worth it. I would think, though, that the Bears would want to get past, if, as David is alluding to, there's some kind of beef there or some kind of issue with the personality of Robbie Gould. I would think you would want to move past that because the guy is so accurate. But just because
if Pace doesn't want to be reminded of his biggest mistake, then don't double doink your way out of the playoffs. I mean, what if you don't bring a guy in? What if he becomes available and you don't want him? And then Redford Jones, Chris Blewett, whoever else is in competition here. I'm missing somebody. Who am I missing? The kid from
Elliott Fry.
Thank you. The kid from the Alliance of American Football. And they miss. Oh, my God, Ryan Pace.
Because of your ego. Yeah.
Woo. That's why you got to have that conversation.
Absolutely. But ultimately, I just don't see the 49ers, as Joe said. I don't see the 49ers letting this guy go at all.
First, you know, we all know that Robbie's just trying to feed his family. It might be steak and lobster, but he's just trying to feed his family. You know, we can joke around about the kicker demanding a trade, but, you know, Joe, how many kickers have been franchise tagged? So if you franchise the guy, he must be pretty important to you, right? You'd think he's important?
You'd be going from the worst in the league to the best, right?
I'm playing to feed my family.
There you go. Thank you, Ray. Here's what I know. Since Robbie Gould has been not a Chicago Bear, he's been the most accurate kicker in the National Football League. The other thing I know is the Bears lost to the Eagles in part, very important, okay, in part because their idiot kicker hit the goalpost twice, okay? There's a chance the Bears could have had it played in the Super Bowl and put up more points than the Rams did in the Super Bowl. I think anybody would have put up more points. Boy, that was a bad Super Bowl. Anyway, I'm all for Robbie coming back to Chicago. You know, the biggest need they have is kicker. They got three guys on the roster right now that they're paying. I don't care if they're paying them $1 or $500,000. They're paying three guys because they don't know what's up. And Pace, we're going to put those guys into high-pressure situations. What would that high-pressure situation be? Well, David, that's a good question. The high-pressure situation would be we're going to put them all in an Uber and different Ubers, and it'll be like Amazing Race, and we'll see who can get to Soldier Field first, turn the lights on, and then put the ball through the uprights. We feel that would be a high-pressure situation that these guys, and then we know that in December or January, we could beat the Eagles on the bad turf at Soldier Field. Oh, does that answer your question, God. Mr. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. David. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah.
That's a good question, David. I think
did Ryan
Ray is on his game today, fellas.
Ray, way to go, Ray.
Did Ryan Pace say anything that informed you what he might be leaning towards as the Bears approach the draft? What do you understand to be his top priority?
You know, he's never going to give anything away. None of those guys are. You heard Tom Telesco in San Diego kind of mock the idea of the pre-draft press conference by GM saying, you don't want to be here, I don't want to be here, I'm not going to tell you anything that's relevant. Although, yesterday I did think Ryan Pace was at least forthright with talking about certain his approach and the fact that, as we have discussed, there's not as much pressure on the Bears general manager this draft than there were in other drafts that he's entered, because those drafts he went into needing stuff. When you draft for need, you're in a different position. You feel a different anxiety. You feel a lot of things different. And he acknowledged the fact they're just looking for depth. I like the fact that there wasn't any sort of indication from Ryan Pace that he was going to buy into this sort of narrative locally that is being built up, like he is this risk taker. He is this bold, aggressive, swashbuckling stud of an NFL executive, and he's got to do something to prove everybody right. Not a lot of ego in the room yesterday, and I liked that. So that tells me that he's going to be motivated to do what is the right thing for the Bears, and that is just to take the best available player, as boring as it is, no matter what the position is. He's not going in looking for a running back. He's not going in looking for a pass rusher necessarily, or an offensive lineman, as some people have suggested. He even answered the question about he would take a quarterback if the right one fell into his lap. He said that was a good question, so thank you very much. But I think that was the guy that you heard open to different ideas, and that's a good sign.
Yeah, I hope it's true. I really do. I think that it'd be nice if he was happy with the running back room, and it was interesting the names that he mentioned in the running back room as well. Ryan Nall apparently has moved ahead of Tyquan Mizell, and also he did mention Cordero Patterson, so that's good. I like that they're using him in many different ways. I think that the Bears have needs, and the Bears have major depth problems, and they need to keep getting really good football players, and every general manager should feel massive pressure every time they come into a draft, because it's when you get into a third round, you're going to be staring down three or four guys that you might like at different positions. And you got to make the right decision there, because it's a very important one, because it's your first one. So even though it's the 87th pick, it's number one for this team. And this kid's going to make the roster. And there's going to be guys that make the roster. So you got to be aware of the positions that you have and the depth you're looking for. I love the idea of taking the best player available, and every team says it, but every team ends up taking the best need, the best player that fills a need available. And I think the Bears have some needs. And the good news is they have enough needs that they should get a pretty damn good player. So kudos to the Bears for putting themselves in this position. They've got a lot of talent on that team, and hopefully that translates into another big year.
Yeah, best player available. It's a cute idea, but it isn't reality. If they stand pat in third, fourth, and fifth rounds, we're going to see them take a running back, maybe an offensive lineman because they need help there, maybe a player in the secondary, pass rusher, those four positions. That's where I expect those three spots to go. And if a quarterback is the best player on the board, there's no way that they're going to draft a quarterback. The championship window is open right now, and they need to get somebody that's going to contribute, especially in that third round pick, 87 overall, going to contribute for this upcoming season. The more he tried to convince us, well, we don't have to go running back. Yes, you do. That's what you said to everyone the day you traded Jordan Howard over to Philadelphia, that the next running back, along with Davis, for the Bears, is going to be coming out of this draft. And it's interesting that they had a private workout. They have limited amount of private workouts, and one of them was with Josh Jacobs, the number one running back on the board, and we've heard about all the backs that they've visited with, so we know they're going to be taking a back.
Remaining Elusive is the name of Ryan Pace's game. That's what he does. This is the, you know, we're going to the comment about taking the best player available is, that's what you say. That's what you do, because you don't want to show your cards. You don't want to let anybody know what you're doing. So I'm not surprised that Ryan Pace said that. That's to be expected, I think. And I think it's also telling that this, I'm going to go back to something Joe O tweeted out last week. The Bears have met with 16 different running backs for this upcoming draft. So there's the sign. There it is. That's the number one priority, is a running back. Absolutely.
They're just doing that to throw us all off. That's just misleading and misguiding. It's got to be running back. And what's he going to say? We're really not happy with our running back room, right? I mean, what did you expect him to say that yesterday? Yeah, we don't know what we have in Davis. And I wish I hadn't traded Jordan Howard. The answer was about Jordan Howard, right?
He was asked about Jordan Howard and talked about how much he likes.
And he brought up Null because he was asked about Ryan Null.
Right.
Listen, it was interesting. So we had Dan Shonka on yesterday. I really like Dan Shonka. Been working with Dan Shonka for years covering the NFL draft. And, you know, after the show, we were all talking, and he mentioned linebacker and interior line. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh? What? Wait. But then if you think about it for a little bit, like, these could be picks for the future. Might not be picks for this year. They might be special team guys this year. They might be guys that have to play because of injury, right? But you've got some guys. Who are the Bears' middle linebackers right now? Who are they?
Danny Trevathan,
this might be his last year as a Chicago Bear. So if at 87, the second or third best inside linebacker in this draft on the board is available, then all of a sudden that does make sense to me. I don't agree with the interior line because I think Ryan Pace has invested enough into this interior of the offensive line. But linebacker isn't as crazy, but because people think you can get these running backs in the fourth, in the fifth, in the sixth, in the seventh round. So who the heck knows? But luckily, let's be a Bears fans. Let's be happy that the Bears are in a position to just take the best available player at 87. They don't. The glaring need for me, it's kicker. That's the glaring need. The glaring need is kicker. And guess what? They're not going to do that at 87. Okay, so you can forget it. So I think it is the best player available.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question.
Ryan Pace was listed as 15th on the list of 2019 general managers by the NFL's website. Is he better than that? What does he need to prove it?
Well, in fairness, he moved up 11 spots. He was actually 26th, which there are 32 general managers in the NFL, obviously. He was 26th. That's because they couldn't measure the other general managers because they'd just been hired. So they took a pass on it, so he was actually dead last on the list, and he moved up 11 spots. Does he deserve to be in the top 10? I think he'll get there if he keeps winning. He's got to keep winning, and Mitchell Trubisky has to be good, and you have to – and I believe the NFL, when they announced this list, and I love claiming it was an announcement from the NFL because it's on their website. When the NFL announced that he was the 15th best general manager in the league, that, you know, the guy that put it together wrote that it's time for the players to step up and prove that they're better than the system. That basically the Bears took a jump on offense because the coach came in and ran a good system that lifted everyone. But let's see all these guys that he signed and drafted take a step forward on their own in terms of what they do on offense. I thought that was an interesting point. Ryan Pace had an unbelievable year last year. It was fantastic. And obviously the Khalil Mack trade is, I don't know, does that mean that John Gruden falls in the ratings or who they even have as a, is, I think Mayock wasn't even...
Reggie McKenzie was fired.
Yes, but Mayock is the new guy technically, right. And he wasn't listed because he was a new guy. He hadn't done anything yet. So, I think there's a... And Reggie would have been fired anyway. It seemed like Gruden was going to move on. But the fact of the matter is that these lists are all nonsense. If you win and you win with regularity and not just have one big year, then you're going to make every list you want and you're going to be celebrated as a genius. And I don't think we're there yet.
You have the type of year that Ryan Pace had. You're going to be in the top half of general managers in the NFL just because of attrition, because of other things. He's got to do it again. How does he what does he need to do to prove it? But he needs to not worry about proving it. That's the one thing you get in trouble when you're doing these big jobs is that you try to prove to everybody else and you succumb to the external forces that are always pushing you in a direction to make a move that maybe is not smart for you to make. And you let the media and the fans kind of drive your agenda. And that's what he needs to avoid. That's what he needs to avoid going into this draft, trying to say, I need to move up to the first round. I need to move up to the second round. I need to fall into this. I need to play to this narrative of I am this bold, aggressive young general manager. No, do what's right for your team. Continue to make good decisions. You've had a good year. Continue it, and you'll continue to ascend. He hired the right coach, and it all started from there, so he gives credit for that. The Mac thing, it fell into his lap, let's be honest. But he did execute it, and he did not try to get too cute. He gave up a lot to get a lot, and that's what you have to do in this job. So I think he's on the right track. And next year at this time, we might be talking about top 10.
Yeah, 11 spots is a big jump for the executive of the year. But when you look at the very top of the list, what do you see? You see rings, and you see GMs that have a history of leading their teams to the playoffs again and again and again. They get back to the playoffs again, and they show they're not a team that goes worst to first, then they're back out of the playoffs. Then maybe they might bounce back in another season. If they can prove that in back-to-back seasons they could have maybe double-digit wins or at least playoff appearances, he will be in the top 10. I thought it was notable that Jerry Jones was ahead of him at number 12 and Chris Ballard number 8.
I mean, 15 is right where Ryan Pace should be. I mean, one big winning season under his belt. That's the formula. It's winning. You guys all laid that out. Winning. How about in your window of contention, you make it to a Super Bowl and you win a Super Bowl, then you'll be number one.
Well, you know, the guy won the executive of the year last year. As I'm looking at this list, one guy that I find to be extremely overrated, and I feel their organization is overrated, and the only thing I like about them as an organization is their cheap concessions, that's Thomas Dimitroff and the Falcons. I mean, what in the wide world of sports is that guy? How is he fifth? Okay. John Dorsey goes all the way up to number four. If we're all working off this, I mean, okay, what? I mean, why is he number four? All of a sudden,
that's the one that stood out to me.
What?
That's hype.
I thought it was.
That's hype.
I thought that was a lot of what he did in Kansas City too.
Okay, I mean Chris Ballard, Mully introduced me to him once or twice down at Bourbon A. Seems like a really nice guy.
Did you see their draft?
Right. I mean, he's moving in the right direction. I'm not saying he shouldn't be Ryan Pace. I'm just talking about like top 10. Okay, and then keeping going, shouldn't Mickey Loomis be ahead of both those guys? I mean that, right? I mean, even what they do out in San Diego, they're the L.A. Chargers now. I made the mistake. Find me $5. I'll do 10 push-ups. Like, Rick Spielman? I mean, he moved down. Jerry Jones, the Titans GM. What has John Elway done? I mean, I know he's won Super Bowls as a quarterback. He can't find a quarterback now. How is, at the very least, Ryan Pace should be 14th ahead of John Elway. At least one more spot. But who cares? I mean, you know, listen, he made a great move. The Bears had cash, the Raiders didn't. He got Khalil Mack. He gets a ton of credit for that, and that's why he's up 11 spots from last year. Khalil Mack.
Nice to have a Khalil Mack, isn't it? It really makes you feel better about the season. Every time you mention him, you talk about his natural instincts, whatever it might be. It's like, oh, God, that guy's fun to watch.
That's why they're going to show his highlights when the Bears draft position, the Raiders draft position comes up on Thursday night.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.